honored guests, esteemed colleagues, beloved family and friends, brother Jesuits. On this feast of the exaltation of the Holy Cross, when we celebrate the triumph of life-giving love, our extended college community gathers with government officials and church dignitaries, academic representatives and Worcester neighbors, and many of my far-flung family and friends on picturesque Mount St. James, where in medieval caps and gowns, with festive music and banners, academic procession and formal speeches, this assembly offers welcome and celebrates commitment as we look toward our institutional future. I am humbled and grateful for the affirmation of our Board of Trustees who have called me to leadership, the enthusiasm of our students and alumni who celebrate the transformative power of a Jesuit education, for the professionalism and the commitment of our faculty on whom is built our institutional reputation, and for the kindness and the generosity of our staff who sustain our quality of life. Ultimately, I am here today because of the Society of Jesus, which initially educated me and then lovingly welcomed me into this apostolic brotherhood and has formed and sustained me over the past 45 years. Building on the values and the blessings of my family, my brother Jesuits have helped me to discern the meaning and purpose of my life and have given me a distinctive way of living and serving the world within a community captured by the spirituality of Ignatius of Loyola. This spirituality is poignantly incarnational in that it finds signs of the presence of God in the created world, in human community, and within the human heart. It is grounded in the divine invitation to enter into an intimate and liberating relationship with God in Jesus, blessed by the Spirit. This relationship progressively calls Jesuits and our colleagues to identify and surrender those perspectives, assumptions, and attachments which limit our imagination and freedom. And increasingly, this relationship with the divine leads us to greater awareness of the beauty and possibility of life and thought, the challenges and inequities of the world, and the importance of discerned service for justice and the common good. This grounding in the seen and unseen is why those of us who embrace this spiritual tradition are often referred to as contemplatives in action, men and women who treasure silence and listening, weighing and discerning, noticing the stirrings of mind and heart in the midst of the needs of the world, and then responding passionately and generously. In Professor Robert Cording's moving poem, The Weeper, which we have just heard, the final sentence about St. Ignatius is hauntingly powerful. He wept, they say, because he'd suddenly feel entirely empty and utterly grateful. All the doors of his heart, which was and was not his at these moments, and which we know only as metaphor, swung wide open, able now to receive and find room for all the world's orphaned outpourings and astonishments. It was Ignatius's inner freedom to surrender himself completely to God and to detach from all those limiting self-understandings and compulsions which had earlier dominated his life, which allowed him to rest in radical emptiness and graced gratitude. In his emptiness, he could relinquish his concerns and preoccupations. He could stand before the power of the transcendent, and he could open his mind and heart to receive what was being given. It was, in fact, this freedom to be empty before God which allowed him to see and hear and feel and taste what Professor Cording tenderly describes as the world's orphaned outpourings and astonishments. In these moments of contemplative attention, his heart and mind were opened. He would marvel at the beauty and the possibility of creation, and in gratitude, He longed to serve those whom his gracious God loved so much. In an increasingly complex and fragmented world seeking new self-understanding, Ignatius saw great need and suffering, but he also saw the hand of God at work in a world of new integrating possibilities. For Ignatius, the signs of his times pointed to the rise of city-states and new political alliances, to ongoing wars and violence in Europe, the Middle and Far East, and Northern Africa, to continents newly discovered, to widespread poverty and plague in cities where unprotected women and children and members of the Jewish community were routinely exploited and excluded, where trade and international exploration were opening up new worlds of language, culture, and scientific discovery, where the church was being divided by radical theological differences and in need of significant reform, and where education was becoming a means of social possibility, not just for clerics and the powerful, but for those of talent and imagination, whatever their class. Into this world, which was rapidly shedding its medieval worldview and embracing the Renaissance, a revived humanism questioned the rigidities of the past and opened up new ways of thinking and new worlds for discovery. At the University of Paris, Ignatius of Loyola and his roommates Francis Xavier and Peter Faber shared the spiritual exercises and the desire to commit themselves totally to the service of God for the transformation of the world. They formed our religious brotherhood, which firmly planted itself in the urban centers of the day. And in the society's first few years, with a discerned commitment to the greater good, but without a clear plan, these early Jesuits began what is now a 465-year-old educational tradition when they responded to the requests of the city fathers of Messina to open a school to educate their sons in ways similar to how the Jesuits trained their own. 50 years later, reflected on a rapidly growing educational system, Jesuit theologian Diego Ledesma posited four goals for Jesuit education which have endured over the centuries: to offer students skills for practical living, to contribute responsibly to their communities as citizens, to develop the mind and the ability to think, to reason, and to celebrate the intellectual life, and to help individuals to achieve their ultimate end of union with God. Almost 300 years after the founding of that first Jesuit school in Messina, Bishop Benedict Fenwick and Jesuit Thomas Maletti founded the College of the Holy Cross, named after the Diocesan Cathedral in Boston, to offer Catholic men in New England an educational experience that reflected the values Father Ledesma articulated. Matching the geography of our campus, the realization of their dream was an uphill challenge. Unrelenting concerns over finances and admissions, the limited availability of Jesuits to teach and administer, the unsupported social and political climate, rising religious intolerance, and a devastating fire which almost closed the college in its first decade were only some of the challenges they faced. But in spite of these daunting difficulties, their fidelity to this struggling institution is a testament to their ultimate reliance on the sustaining power of God. Further, their belief in the liberating power of education and the intellectual life, their sense of mission to assist the predominantly immigrant Catholic population find its place in the social fabric of the United States, and their deep desire to educate the Catholic community in appropriating a more complete understanding of faith, meaning, and purpose propelled them forward. Over the past 169 years of our existence, these same passions, in the Ignatian way, duly adapted to persons, places, and times, have sustained Holy Cross through many other difficult moments. A turn-of-the-century national debate over the methods of the liberal arts curriculum which radically challenged and eventually refocused the fundamentals of humanist education in the tradition of the Ratio Studiorum. The economic effects of the Great Depression, a resizing of the student body and curriculum during and after the Second World War, the social, cultural, and religious upheavals of the 60s and 70s, which challenged our accustomed ways of proceeding, and consequently stimulated significant professionalization of academic standards, diversified our student body, welcomed coeducation, appropriated the reforms of the Second Vatican Council, reformulated the role of athletics, and eventually moved us into national rankings. At each moment in our history, then, and sometimes with agonizing caution, deliberation, and prayer, Holy Cross has continued to cherish and appropriate what is unique to our Jesuit and Catholic heritage, has continued to raise the critical questions of meaning and purpose for our students, has increasingly emphasized the importance of the intellectual life, and has prepared our graduates for vocational and career choices which make a disproportionate difference in our world. At this point in our institutional history, as once again we enter a period of change and transition, we are called to pause and assess where we are and what God and this moment in time are asking of us. While the campus has never looked as beautiful and welcoming, and our student body has never been as selective, and our faculty are renowned not only for their academic achievements, but also for the quality of their engagement with our students, and our community-based learning and several shared enterprises have transformed our engagement with the city of Worcester, and our campus liturgical life and retreat programs provide transformative opportunities for adult faith, this moment of transition prompts a discerned reflection about who we are and how we will flourish in the future. We recognize that it is not only our internal transitions that cause us to reflect on our mission and institutional effectiveness, but the world around us is changing at an increasingly rapid pace, and higher education is especially vulnerable to the uncertainties that are gathering. For the past 4 years, our world has been involved in a financial crisis second only to the Great Depression, and financing the ever-rising costs of higher education is becoming increasingly impossible for the majority of American families. At a college which has proudly identified our commitment to need-blind admissions with our mission to be inclusive and diverse, we wonder how we can sustainably manage the need for skyrocketing financial aid while supporting our desire to be an inclusive community. The role of technology, often viewed as a potential cost saver in higher education, as well as the provider of more targeted and nimble delivery of academic content, is forcing us all to think about what we need to know, how we deliver what we need to know, and how technology might enhance and not diminish the sacred relationship between faculty and student, which makes a liberal arts education so transformative. In each sector of the college community, as our respective areas of expertise continue to ask more of faculty and staff to meet ever-expanding professional standards, as communication technology has intensified exponentially the pace of our lives, and as pressure on our students not only to be well-rounded, but also exceptional in multiple areas of achievement, we are all wondering if life can be sustained, if not balanced, between the competing expectations of professional life, family needs, civic and social responsibilities, and commitments to maintain our physical, psychological, and spiritual well-being. As a Jesuit institution, where the number of Jesuits continues to diminish, and colleagues are increasingly taking on the promotion of our institutional mission, we wonder what new roles and forms of engagement this appropriation will take. And as American Catholic College, in a season of political stridency and decreasing civility, when the quality of religious freedom is being debated on many fronts, and within the church itself, probing questions on the enduring significance of the Second Vatican Council, the implications of our call to social justice, and the uncertain relationship between the role of law and its correlate, human compassion, we wonder what it means for us to be a private Catholic liberal arts college in the Jesuit tradition. And as our students, their parents, and the public ponder the efficacy of a liberal arts education when considering its cost and the privilege it often denotes, we ponder how best to communicate the enduring value of this educational experience. This moment of intense challenge and turmoil, in many ways not at all different from those of the past, also offers us an opportunity to turn again to the virtues and practices which have sustained this educational community over time. Whether or not we share a common religious tradition, our institutional history of remarkable leaders who lived as contemplatives in action offers us an opportunity to evaluate the quality of our individual and collective reflectivity, which is essential not only for mature religious life, but in a parallel way, all creative intellectual endeavors, as well as any sustained balance in our lives. Institutionally, our commitment to build a college contemplative center will offer us a dedicated place for prayer and reflectivity, as well as an opportunity for us to develop a variety of programs, not only serving our students, but also our faculty, staff, and alumni. The significance of this center and its programs may also stimulate us to begin a campus-based conversation on the rhythms of life that so many of us are finding dehumanizing, as well as to discern common expectations which prioritize our academic commitments of teaching, learning, and research, and help us to integrate appropriately spiritual, artistic, athletic, and social co-curriculars as well. Our ability to engage thoughtfully the ongoing implications of a struggling global economy will require us to redirect aspects of our financial plan for the foreseeable future. How we listen, discern, and creatively act to sustain our academic excellence and retain our financial stability, and how we moderate our capital expectations in light of limited resources, will be enhanced by our freedom to evaluate some of our traditional ways of proceeding and to imagine some new ways of operating. As a Jesuit enterprise, this moment of transition also invites us to continue to reflect on the global character of the educational experience we offer on and off campus, and the makeup of our campus community itself. As demographic shifts in the U.S. population move west and south, and as our world becomes increasingly interconnected, how might we attract and retain students, faculty, and staff who will add increasing diversity to our campus identity? And as the Church and the Society of Jesus are promoting interreligious understanding as a necessary condition of global engagement, social justice, and peace, and in light of recent violence and death, how might our educational experiences engage and advance our appreciation for diverse religious traditions and spiritualities? And with the national election upon us, we are reminded that discerning the contours of responsible citizenship requires not only sensitivity for the legitimate rights and needs of all those who live in this city and country, but as a nation blessed with a disproportionate percentage of global resources, we are asked to discern and embody our social responsibility for the human family. And finally, as a community of educators, we have an opportunity to define in our time what contemplation in action means at Holy Cross. We can choose to be reflective, to live in the poet's graced emptiness that heightens our sensitivities, frees our imaginations, and moves us toward generous and just living. We can choose to serve our institutional common good and our responsibilities to the world of need and possibility around us. In these challenging times, we can choose to act with such integrity and ingenuity in making difficult decisions that others see in us ways of linking prayer, reflectivity, and discerned choices that inspire and energize. In his recent book, College, What It Was, Is, and Should Be, Andrew Del Banco highlights an entry from an 1850s diary written by a student at a small Methodist college. Del Banco writes, and I quote, "One spring evening, after attending a sermon by the college president that left him troubled and apprehensive, he made the following entry in his journal. Oh, that the Lord would show me how to think and how to choose." That sentence, poised somewhere between a wish and a plea, sounds archaic today, and yet I have never encountered a better formulation of what a college should strive to be, an aid to reflection, a place where young people take stock of their talents and passions and begin to sort out their lives in a way that is true to themselves and responsible to others. End of quotation. For us at Holy Cross, this prayer, first spoken long ago, isn't an archaic formulation, but a living one. One that is grounded in our Ignatian practice of being contemplatives in action. May this new moment of beginnings that we celebrate today help us to listen, discern, choose, and act to create a future with peace and hope. Thank you.